7:24, joining us now in our studios is Northfield Mayor Rhonda Powdell and City Administrator Bent Martig. Good morning.
Good morning. Morning, Jeff.
Thank you so much for coming in today. Much appreciated. Yeah. We have some things to talk about. You had a your first regular meeting in the month of February, as the first meeting was caucused out, I guess. I don't know if that is the right term, but you did have a regular meeting, and that includes a regular agenda.
Yeah.
It started started things off with a continuation of what you talked about last work session last week, and that's TIF financing for the Craywood Apartments. And I guess Ben, we can start off with you and asking you this, topic. There is a distinction from the whole development to just the apartment complex, and we're talking about just the apartment part this time, aren't we?
Yeah, this is all a journey. It's like multiple phases all the way along with this project, which when you have these, you have subdivisions involved, and then you have some incentives related to financing, you end up with even more actions along the way. So this was a consideration of tax increment financing development agreement by the city council, and it did pass on a 5-1 vote. With that, tax increment financing, I would just kind of summer it this way. For the apartment complex, under state law, they allow you that if you have a certain number of minimum affordable housing units, so in this case, the developer's committing 40% of the 100-unit apartment building made to incomes at or below 60% of area median income. So that opens the door under state law for the city to offer incentives that if they need this assistance for the project to go forward and have affordability components, it's eligible for use of this tool to encourage affordable housing projects in Northfield, but from the state's perspective across the state of Minnesota. Certainly in this time, we know housing is very challenging for all types. Basically how it works is, if it's approved and determined it's needed, they have to meet all the conditions of the city council up front when they build it, and then every year they have to meet those conditions. And basically how it works, it's kind of like a rebate. So they pay their tax. If they're performing, they get 95% of that back. It does not include operating levies of the school district, though, so all the other local taxes, county, city, and the school building portions are all included, that they get some of that back up to 26 years, or in this project, $2.45 million, whichever happens first. And so there's no risk to the city. It's if they pay it, it goes back to them. If they don't pay it, they don't meet the conditions, that all that tax value goes on to the city tax base, and they no longer are getting that benefit. So it's really a zero-risk proposition from the city standpoint. Doesn't impact existing taxpayers. It's really capturing that new value. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts, a little bit of TIF. We could probably dig into it deeper, but that's kind of technically what the council considered last night, just from an operational standpoint on TIF.
You mentioned that 95%. Will that go for the duration of the TIF period, or is it a graduated scale?
Yeah, it's that's on an annual basis. It's at that amount. So whenever they hit that maximum, that would be when it would end. So it's not graduated. It's basically there. Now, when you have construction projects happen, the full tax value doesn't typically all go at once. You know, it's kind of a delay from when it's valued to when the taxes pay. So it'll probably be even a couple of years before the increment, you know, assuming they get the project up and going and there's still approvals left. But you know, even if it's getting built, there's sometimes partial tax value and things. But eventually, yes, it's that total amount that they're paying, 95% of it.
There was one vote against the bill that was brought. That no vote was Councilperson Zuccolato, and he was concerned about, is this affordable, the actual affordability of that. You had mentioned the state guidelines, 60% of the average median income. What does that come out to? Do we know what any idea is?
I would have to do some digging, though, Jeff. I don't have the numbers in front of me. But yeah, this is established by state law. It's very common that they use these for even like our federal community development block grant dollars that they get. They use these average median incomes, and certainly the project won't be able to serve everybody. There could be still income challenges there, and you know, like that gets back to too, is that hopefully this frees up other housing that maybe people would otherwise use. So maybe that opens up the rental market for some of those people that are paying less than they might be able to afford or have products that they might not be able to be in this apartment building. I know through my lifetime, I have lived in housing that maybe wasn't my ideal housing, but went there, and I probably took someone else's unit up by doing that. And so that's one perspective. And we're also working on a whole bunch of other housing goals beyond this project that we talked about and included in the background as well.
All right. Mayor, any comments about that, or should we move on to the next one?
Actually, yes. So I just want to highlight, and yes, it was included in the staff memo, but it's really helpful to know and understand for the community that when we put our strategic plan together, the first iteration and then the second, we heard loud and clear, not only from really across the board in the community, that housing was a top priority, and we needed to figure out a way to get it moving on multiple different fronts, right? And so in the staffing memo, it really highlights the multiple other partnerships that have been brought forward. People from Habitat, our Habitat for Humanity organization, is working on additional housing. We have the Community Action Centers, Hillcrest. We have Spring Creek 2, a 32-unit affordable housing that will be brought into the southern, southeastern portion of the city. We have another apartment building potentially in the works here, Heritage Lofts, which includes studio to three-bedroom units. And we are also working with Riverside Mobile Home Park, which is that former Florellas, to really get that area of the city habitable for multiple people and increasing the number of units that are in there. So we are looking at housing across the board on multiple areas of the city, getting housing out there, supply, because also if you increase supply, there's potential, right, that you can see some of those rents go down. Not all housing options are right for everyone. And this is not, this is just one of those options out there. And I'm just really pleased, quite frankly. I feel like a lot of the input that we've been given over the course of the time that this project has been in the works has really helped to bring forward and form and shape some of the recommendations that were not only in the Planning Commission recommendation in their resolution to us and that the council adopted, but also the TIF agreement. And we'll start to see more of those requirements come out within the final plat and the development agreement that are still yet to be voted on by the City Council in mid-March here.
All right, let's move on. You took some action on the bids for the 2022, the Northwest Area Mill and Overlay project that we have out there. I don't know how many separate projects you have. Is that all one on the northwest side of town? But was that approved last night?
Yes. The quick answer is yes. And okay, we do these each and every year. And I think they work to, there's some additional safe routes to school sidewalks that were added into that area because they fall in that northwest quadrant of the city. You will see that even as we're doing a project in the northwest part of the city, I believe next year, then we would flip to doing a project on the other side of the community. And so just really ensuring we have an overarching 5-year capital improvement plan that really takes into account the conditions of the different streets. And so this is just one of those processes that has been through the vetting, and this is just one more step to move it forward so that we can get some of those streets and additional sidewalks and trails improved in the northwest area.
Anything to add, Ben?
One thing that's a little unique in this project, I guess, talking about scope, is within the bids, we're actually throwing in pickleball court reconstructions. And you might be like, why is that in a street project and trail project? And we've had some bids that have gone really higher than we were expecting over the, I think we did it once or twice maybe, even that we've bid these, I think. So what we're trying to do is package it into a larger bid package. Hopefully that would mean if it's packaged in a much larger project, might we get more competitive and better material prices with some of that too. So that's an unusual component of the scope of this project that's being included in there too. So that's one area that's unique with it.
Is that pickleball court going to tip the scales on that one, or?
I don't think so. And frankly, I don't know okay. if it's getting itemized out within the bid package, but that would be common as well, that we sometimes might have it where it kind of stands alone if you need to. You need to include it out of it.
All right. Let's talk about zero waste plan. You considered the resolution accepting a zero waste plan. What is a zero waste plan?
Yeah, so I think like I told the council, I'm trying to keep the ship afloat here. Beth Callistead, our staff person who was working on this, moved on and we're in transition for a new position. And so this had been reviewed by the council in the past. A zero waste plan create strategies to reduce waste by using materials more sustainably, preventing waste to landfills, and reducing quantities of unnecessary materials and packaging. So some Carleton students, community volunteers, and one of six of our work groups on the Climate Action Plan work to create a plan with strategies about how to try and reduce waste within the community. So there are opportunities for collaborative strategies where community volunteers can help move this forward, some city potential activities as well. And so the council accepted this plan last night and provides opportunities. It's like many of our plans, it's very robust and ambitious, like Northfield likes to be ambitious on their plans. So, you know, there is a prioritization process that's kind of in place and looking at that. But yeah, so that's part of it. One fact I made note of that I wasn't aware of, that one of our volunteers spoke at the mic last night, said 400 pounds of food is typically wasted by the average American, it's estimated. So they gave an example of, you know, if you go to the, it's equivalent to purchasing five bags of groceries at the grocery store and then leaving two in the parking lot. So really thinking about the amount of waste that we have and how that impacts all kinds of things, like all of the transportation and, you know, carbon that comes out of vehicles to deliver that to the stores, and then just people who need food and production. So those are all things that made me thinking a little bit in different ways last night with some of that testimony too. But this plan is now official and on the shelf, I guess, and able to be used as a guidebook.
And lastly, you talked about the strategic plan and giving that some updates for all the way through from now to 2024. Was there much movement on that?
Are you kidding me? There was so much. There's just a lot going on with that strategic plan. It was that opportunity to give an update to the council on what has been done and where we're headed. And Mr. Martig, really, it's when you start to look at it holistically, you just really have a greater appreciation for the number of things that are in process and that are being worked on behalf of community members. So I would just look to Ben if he wants to highlight some different mm-hmm. things.
So we did adopt it about mid-year, so we're technically six months in. So we're going to be developing kind of an annual report in a few months here. I would also say you want to learn more about it, come to the State of the City address. It's going to be coming up here in March. Yeah. We have to finalize our location. We do it at the White Center at Carleton. So I think this week we're hoping to hear what regulations there might be related to COVID protocols and things. But that's part of what the mayor talks about in her speech is kind of where we're at, where we're going with the strategic priorities of the city, along with a lot of interesting other things, awards, kids participating in other activities. So I would say you want to learn more about what we've got going on. That's going to be an opportunity soon for the community to come and get involved in.
All right. Anything else you'd like to mention while we have you here?
I know you've been, one thing I was talking to Rich before I came in here is we're certainly paying attention to redistricting, and I haven't had a chance to dig in since that announcement last noon, but that's on our list and certainly something that we're curious as far as how we're impacted. So I was appreciating your reporter here local to help inform me because I've been busy between noon yesterday and this morning. So Rich has been trying to help me out. And he made some reference to like some video game that kind of looks like Tetris or something on the.
Goodness. Oh, wow.
It's different. I'll tell you that right now from our legislative, you know, both the Senate and the House, quite a bit different than we've seen over the past 10 years. But yeah. It happens every redistricting. So yeah. There you have it.
Yeah.
Mayor, Mr. City Administrator. Thank you so much for coming in today. We appreciate it, and we'll see you again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jeff.
Northfield Mayor Rhonda Pownell, City Administrator Ben Martig join us every week after a council meeting here on 95.1 The One and AM 1080. We've got Rich coming in with a brief look at local news in just a moment or so. State news is next. And joining us with a look at local news from the KYMN News Center, it is Rich Larson.
Of all people.
Boy, we're playing kind of musical chairs this morning.
Exactly. All right. So, here we go. On Monday night, the Northfield School Board voted to relax many of the COVID-19 health protocols that have been in place since the beginning of the school year. Beginning next week, masks will be recommended but not required in all district buildings. Similarly, those considered to be close contacts with someone who tests positive for COVID will no longer have to go into quarantine. And the district will end the practice of contact tracing. Superintendent of